Welcome to this talk on Buts in the Browser. My name is Anders Rune Jensen. I have a master's degree from Aalborg University in 2006. I've been working on Secure Scuttlebutt for a few years. The first part of this talk is going to be focused on application architectures. And one of the first architecture we're going to look at is the standard web architecture that you probably all know, where clients are connected to servers over the internet. Some of the features of this web architecture is that you have this low powered clients and fat server where most of the code is running on. These servers store all the data, they're centralized, and the UI is standardized, and you do this continuous upgrade where they keep pushing out changes. And if you don't like the latest change, then it's just too bad. In most cases, you can choose another service. One of the features of these systems is that because they have these massive amounts of data, they start, of course, doing machine learning on this. And it's important to look at two different kinds of data. There's the user-consented data, and then there's the tracking data, for example, of your mouse movements or how long you've been looking at it at this page before you went somewhere else and so on. And all of this data is fed into these opaque machine learning algorithms, and they can be seen as black boxes, in that from an outside point of view you have no idea how they work, and they can be changed at any point. And in the same way that proprietary software had an attack vector where you can just put in, for example, code, nobody will know that it's there, and maybe people don't even know exactly how these things work based on the data, for example, then it can be an attack vector if people can put in, for example, data that will change these algorithms and then start showing different content to these different users. Another way of building these systems is a more decentralized and federated way. Two examples of this is email, which is now really old, and Mastodon, which is a more modern example of this kind of system. If you look at these federated systems, then instead of having mostly servers run by one company, then these can be characterized by having multiple parties running these different servers that would then be in a federated way exchanging messages between them. The data is still on the servers, but some of the nice things about this is that it do foster quite a lot of diversity, and people are able to do like local governance of these different servers, and you can have communities around different aspects, for example. And this is a lot nicer than the centralized approach. These systems do have a tendency towards eventual centralization, as can be seen, for example, with Gmail is a good example for this from the email world. Another way to build this system is a more distributed way, where Scuttlebutt is one example of this, that is another, for example. And in a distributed system, it's more characterized by having thin servers and fat clients instead. And the data is local first, meaning that it's stored locally on the device, and then exchange, and the UI can then be adapted to the community because it's running directly on your machine. I just want to point out to this really excellent article from a few years back from Inkton Switch that some of you might know, which talks about some of the aspects of local first software. So because it's running on your machine, then it can be really, really fast. You don't have any network latency. You can have multiple devices using the data. It can work offline, and you can build collaborative systems using this. And another really nice aspect is that it has a longevity aspect to it, because you are in charge of your data. You can have it as long as you want, and you're not at the mercy of somebody shutting down a service that you've been using. You can have more privacy as well, because you can say when and how you want to exchange the data, and you have more user control. So in summary, you have to be mindful of the implicit power structures that are in the architectures of how this software is built, and there are different approaches, and it's not like one is necessarily better than the other ones. All of them have pros and cons. So let's look at Scuttlebutt. Scuttlebutt is actually an image of Scuttlebutt with the different nodes here, and the red dots are earlier nodes in the network, and the blue are new people in the network. And it's fascinating to see how these different connections mean that people are connected in different ways, and it's not like centralized necessarily in any way. So what is Scuttlebutt? Scuttlebutt is an identity-centered system, meaning that it's very much focused on people instead of, for example, direct messages. It's a local-first system, so you write data locally on your machine first. Then it's a friend-work network, which is a bit similar to a social network, but it's not necessarily the same way. You follow people, and you can block people, and this has meaning over how data is exchanged. Data is exchanged by gossiping with the nodes that you connect to. So the main building block of Scuttlebutt is the feed, and an identity has this feed where the first message has some different content, has timestamp, and some you can put in whatever content you want in this, and then it has the author, and then it's signed by the identity. And then as you add more messages, they are linked together, and this means that when you do get the messages, you are sure that no messages in the middle, for example, are left out. And from this, you can build this kind of event sourcing system where you structure changes to a system as events. And then you have these feeds of immutable messages. And it's not like in Bitcoin or something like that, where you have a global ledger that you need consensus on. This is more like everyone has their own mini ledger that they can exchange with other peers, and you build structure on top of these. The messages in these feeds can be public or private, and they're just regular messages. And a larger file, for example, images and so on, are stored outside of the chain as blobs, linked by their hash. And it's important to note that only you store the private key, so only you can generate new messages, and only you can read the private messages sent to you. One of the other aspects about SSB is that content is addressed by hash, and this means that because of these messages are signed and hashed, you can then link to them by the hash directly. And this means that compared to a normal system where you go to some URL to see something, the hash of a certain message is totally unique, and this gives a location transparency aspect to this as well. Messages are exchanged by gossiping, as said earlier, and this has very diff many ways of exchanging messages. It could be over a local network. Or it could be a pub, which is just a way to relay messages between nodes because it has a public IP. It could be rooms where people connect through an intermediary, connect to each other and exchange messages. Could be distributed hash tables, could be onion hidden services where you connect directly to somebody else, or it could be even SneakerNet with USB sticks. It's very agnostic to this. The way that replication works is that the feed follows other feeds, and in this way it generates almost like a graph. So the feeds that you follow directly are in the hops one in the inner circle, and the feasts that they follow are in the hubs too. And the normal desktop applications show messages within hubs too. And this means that it's not really possible for some random stranger to send messages to you, for example. It has to be within these hubs, and this is a really good way to not get so much spam, for example. You are really in charge of what data you want to see. But there's another aspect of this, which is the you want to push out data relatively fast. So we have these long-running connections, and we do use epidemic broadcast trees to efficiently exchange what the latest state of like potentially thousands of different feeds are. And this is really efficient because of this identity-based ordered logs, where you can just say that the latest message for this identity is X, and then you're sure that people know what you're talking about. Another aspect of SSB is that it has this caps, which can be seen like multiple universes. If you do use a different caps than the main network, then your messages will be totally separate from the rest, and this is a way to, for example, structure applications so you're sure that it's not replicated within the normal network. So there are different implementations of this, like JavaScript, Go, Rust, and so on. We have a couple of different desktop applications, Patchwork and Oasis. We have mobile clients, and then I'll be talking about a browser client as well. So this is an example of one of the most popular application, Patchwork. You can see it looks like almost like any kind of social network with posts and replies and likes and so on. And you can build applications on top of this. So this is, for example, a book application where books are just messages posted. You can then edit them and review them and post that as messages as well. And because of this hubs aspect, you get data from your friends or friends of friends. So you just see books from what your friends read, for example, not necessarily random strangers. One of the other really interesting applications, this is a How, where they've built this application on top of SSB using private groups. So everything in this is encrypted. And what's really nice to see it that it, they use their own terminology. So do you use words, for example, like tribes and so on, which is very native to their local community in New Zealand there. You can build even Git running over SSB, for example. And then the next I'll be talking about, so we started up working on the on a grant we got from the European Union, which is under the NGI Pointer. And this is the main team. This is me, Senna, Henry, and Andre. So we've been working on sort of taking SSB to the next level for the past 3 months, and I'll talk about a bit about what we've been working on. So we've been building database improvements in the JavaScript world. So we have in the order of roughly 10x improvement in indexing speed. We're building a new database, SB DB2. We've been building a new fast way to query for these messages, which is JitGB. And then we've been building EBT and Go and doing some improvements to the private groups. And then some of the things that we will be working on is the under rooms design, which has aliases and different privacy modes, and also partial replication. And these will enable SSB to be a lot faster, especially for onboarding. Some of these database improvements is that we have built ripped out the old Flume system and replaced it with a async append-only log in the bottom, and then we do store messages as BIF in a binary format instead of JSON. And then on top of this, we have JitDB to do queries. We have also have LevelDB indexes, and all of this is wrapped into the SSB DB2. So if you look at TTP, it has this interface where you can do a query, for example, of posts of two different authors would be look like this. And one of the things about this is that we did build DB2 with the goal of also working in the browser. And this means that we can have the exact same code running in on a normal desktop or a mobile app and also use it in the browser. And the way it works in the browser is that keys are stored in a local storage and the data is stored in, if it's on Firefox, for example, it's IndexedDB. In Chrome, it's ChromeFS because it's a bit faster. And for the crypto stuff, we use Wasm, which is almost as fast as the C version. And for connecting to other peers, we use WebSockets for rooms, for example. And if you look at the architecture of the SSB browser core, you can see that you have on the left side we have the network aspect, and for this we have the secret handshake, which is used so you're sure that the other person you're connected to is exactly this identity. This is the same identity as the feed identity, and we have this mux RPC there as well. And then for the connections, we have SSB con in the rooms. Then we have these sync with the EBT that I talked about earlier and the blobs and the feeds. And then we have the DB2. And then we have the feed on the right side there where we have the keys and we have the validation that the feed is indeed correct. And this means that you can have a regular kind of social application running directly in the browser. As you can see, it has reaction, likes, and so on. You can write replies to messages and all of this stuff. This works now, and you can build like CRDT, this conflict-free data replication, or data types where you can do like shared markdown documents, for example, where two browsers in this example are writing in the same document. It has a little chat in the bottom where you can send ephemeral messages between them. And one of the problems with putting SSB in a browser is that you get this URL centralization, which is the problem that the well. Of course, you can run it from your own machine, but it would be nice that you can just go to some website and then you have SSB running there. And it does give the sort of same centralization as the federated universe where you're dependent on a server. So what if instead we can run the applications directly from SSB, meaning that the applications would be a part of the SSB networks? And one way to do this is that you can have, because you have the blob storage, you can actually store the actual JavaScript code that you need to run this as blobs, and then you can have messages as these updates channels. So you can just have one root message, which is the SSB browser demo, for example, and then you could do replies on this, which is the latest version of this, and then it's fully decentralized app store, more or less. And you could have a small core where you can then put on this server somewhere, and then from this you can then run applications, and you can put in the sort of root message and the idea of the feed that you trust, and then you can run applications from your friends necessarily. And the way that it works or looks is that, like this small demo here, where you, as you can see, you have the input box where you put in the hash of the message, and then you have the author as well, and then you download the app based on that, and then you can of course put in a different remote server, just a WebSocket, and from this you have like any number of application you want to run on this, completely independent of where it's the site is stored. Okay, so thank you for listening, and I hope this was interesting. And if you want to check out more of this, go to scuttlebutt.io. and see.